The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I will welcome everyone to another live recording of Trump's Trials and Tribulations, New York Trial Dispatch edition. Today is May 3rd. And if my count is correct, it is day 11, inclusive of jury selection of the trial. I'm joined, as always, by our legal fellow and courts correspondent, Anna Bauer, and editor-in-chief, Benjamin Wittes.
Yo.
So, let's kick it right off. Who was in the courtroom today? Who was in the press overflow room? And for the person in the courtroom, set the scene.
Well, I was in the courtroom, and unlike Anna Bauer, who knows everybody's face and, you know, is social enough to actually know who's, you know, Jason Miller and who's...
And who is Don Jr. versus Eric Trump.
Right. But that's, you know, some people are into the People magazine side of this, and some people are not. And, you know, I am the one who... thought for a long time, because I'd only ever seen her name in writing, that the artist who everybody calls Beyonce was named Bey once. And so, you know, like, it's really unreasonable to expect me to be able to pick Boris Epstein out of a crowd. But I do think that Boris Epstein was there. And I think he was the only one of the Trump entourage who was there today. Trump did. I just want to say, I don't know if it was in my capacity as Ben Wittes or in my capacity as a wearer of a dog shirt or in my capacity as just a generic member of the press, but Trump gave me the stink eye today as he was walking out of court. He walked down there, he made direct eye contact with me, and, you know, it was very cool. But again, was that because he hates Lawfare? I mean, he seems to love
He uses loves the law. Term
right,
was, all the time.
To John Hawkinson, who's asking whether the dog shirt was visible, yes, the dog shirt was visible.
I would also just like to say that although Ben is saying that he thinks Boris Epstein was in the room, the pool reports indicate that Jason Miller was there.
Well, to Ben, Boris Epstein is just a name on an indictment.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, that's great, Ben, that you got the stink eye. You join a distinguished group, I think, including Norm Eisen has been glared at, George Conway, Lawrence O'Donnell, I think, had an utterance directed his way from Trump. Is that right, Anna?
Yes, I still do not know. I think they discussed it on Lawrence's show last night, but I actually didn't get a chance to ask Adam and Lawrence about what went on there. But we... did see that there was some kind of murmuring in the direction of Lawrence O'Donnell, the MSNBC host. I will say I am not quite part of the club. I'm a part of the Trump eye contact club. Whenever he's looked back, either I think the first time it happened was in Florida, because he always kind of looks back to see who's in the courtroom. But then the other day he was walking down the aisle and he looked at me, but I don't think it was a glare because he has no idea who I am. So I unfortunately am not part of the glare club.
Well, so look, I mean, I don't know that I am too either, because to be looked at by Trump is to be glared at by Trump.
It's like the Eye of Sauron finding you.
Or like the Mona Lisa. He just kind of follows you around the room as you go.
Like the dog shirt.
Exactly. Well, the courtroom drama continues. But remind us, when we kick things off, the witness who was resuming, and then whether or not there were any preliminary matters before the witness began, as the judge often takes care of.
Yes, so we did have some preliminary matters related to some matters related to exhibits, which Ben can remind everyone of, but I can speak about the witness who was a continuation of the witness, Doug Dowse, who was the forensics expert that we started with towards the end of yesterday. This was the continuation of Emile Beauvais's cross-examination of this witness, who is the person who examined and did a forensic extraction on Michael Cohen's phones. And so the prosecution, of course, yesterday had introduced a number of, you know, text messages and audio recordings, that kind of thing from this phone. In the middle of this cross-examination where we left off, Emile Beauvais was still focusing on things like chain of custody. It seemed like the implication is that there might have been some kind of, you know, way that the data from the phones might have been compromised or manipulated. There was a continuation for several long minutes of this line of questioning. It dealt with very technical inquiries about, factory resets and laptop syncing and all kinds of stuff. That was quite technical. I'm curious to hear if you saw what the jurors' reactions to this was, but the end kind of, I think, conclusion of it, to sum it up, is just basically that Emile Beauvais was trying to say this data from this phone can only be trusted insofar as Michael Cohen can be trusted, and you can't trust Michael Cohen.
Yeah, so I think that's exactly right. That is the point. And as we will see with later witnesses, that is the point with all of these witnesses. The government wants to present a multi-witness diverse case based on documents, based on lots of different people's testimony. And one of them is Michael Cohen, and another one may be Stormy Daniels, although I'm still not convinced Stormy Daniels is actually necessary to testify. But a big part of the defense strategy is to show that all of these things trace back to Michael Cohen, that if you think Michael Cohen is, to use the technical name of the defense, a lying sack of shit, then that actually pervasively affects a lot of the other material. So, for example, we'll see that when we talk about Hope Hicks in a minute, but that's also true of the technical stuff. And all this technical mumbo jumbo that Emile Beauvais was going through was, I think, designed to say that you cannot trust anything pulled off of Michael Cohen's phone if you don't trust Michael Cohen, because this was not seized and then immediately processed, and there were opportunities for manipulation. And the government's response to this is to get this witness to make clear that he saw no indications whatsoever of manipulation or tampering with any of the evidence. He's a very candid and very good witness. And he and Beauvais left it at, you can't exclude the possibility. And there are gaps in the technical record that are only closed to the extent that you believe Michael Cohen. And the witness, Mr. Dowse, readily assented to that. And that sets, of course, up in a closing Beauvais to say, you know, oh, we're not challenging the forensics, but their own witness acknowledges that if you don't trust Michael Cohen, you can't count on the fact that this audio tape, which is most about the audio tape of Cohen and Trump, was not doctored in some way or cut off in some way, and that there isn't some missing piece that's, you know, highly exculpatory. And so I think that's the actual nitty gritty of it, was long and boring. But that's the takeaway, that the government gets in all this material, but the defense gets to argue that we're going to get to why Hope Hicks cried, Penelope.
But before we do, Tyler, you asked about preliminary matters. Mm-hmm. It's all coming back to me now after a long day. So, yes, there were some preliminary matters before we got to Doug Dowse. One is that there had been this, you know, kind of implication or misunderstanding that Justice Marchand wanted to correct. He kind of said, you know, I think that it's been implied that maybe the order restricting extrajudicial statements, aka the gag order, might impact in some way Trump's constitutional right to testify. He said, no, that's not true at all. And I just want to advise Mr. Trump that he does have an absolute right to testify in his own defense, and that that is not in any way limited by the gag order. The gag order only applies to extrajudicial statements. And Mr. Trump, you can, you know, confer with your counsel if you have any more questions about that. And then we also went into some outstanding issues regarding some evidence that the prosecution wanted to get in related to these Washington Post. I think it one was a tweet, maybe, and the other was an article. Is that correct, Ben? About the Access Hollywood publication of the tape. The reason that they wanted to get these in, even though Justice Mershon had already said, you know, parts of the transcript of the tape can come in, but I don't want the actual video to come in. And instead, they wanted to get these tweets and the article in to show the publication and time of the publication of the tape. And so Justice Mershon said, I'm going to try to let the parties work out whether there could be a stipulation to this. And so those were the two preliminary matters.
Great. And before we move on from Mr. Das, I just want to point out to the few people I saw on Twitter asking why Anna wasn't minute by minute live tweeting everything from his testimony. I hope you hear by now that she was sparing you some of these mundane details. So just a word in defense of
Anna's live tweeting. Yes, people were saying like, but we want the details. And usually we are all for the neurotic, excessive amount of detail. But guys, I am telling you.
Read the transcript.
You did not want to know. It was immaterial, really, to the point of it all. It, trust me, I saved you from yourselves.
So, Ben, yesterday you were sitting next to me in the press overflow room. You made a prediction as to who the next witness would be. So the moment everyone's been waiting for, was your prediction correct, technically correct? And who was the next witness?
So it was in all spiritual senses completely accurate, and in one technical sense was inaccurate. So I predicted that the next witness was Hope Hicks based on the fact that this Doss character was getting in a whole lot of stuff about her text messages with Michael Cohen and the like. In fact, the next substantive witness was Hope Hicks, but there was something I had overlooked, which was, of course, that there were some material the prosecution needed to get in to ask her about that came from a different source, which was their own paralegal. And so there was an intervening summary witness who was, by the way, my favorite witness of the whole production, and who's going to have
Keith, you just said yesterday Keith Davidson is now your favorite witness.
Well, no, he's my favorite bad guy witness. Okay. She's my favorite good guy witness. She was very cool, and she's going to have a great law school admissions essay, as one of your friends tweeted. But she was in to introduce a bunch of other things that they needed to ask Hope Hicks about. So, yes, I was right in all but the most technical sense.
Yeah. And she also had an amazing moment on cross-examination in which after going through, you know, she was reviewing these social media posts on direct examination. Basically, there is a documents witnesses so that the prosecution can get a bunch of these posts in from Trump. And on cross-examination, Todd Blanche, who actually was kind of laughing throughout this cross-examination, which was kind of a change in tone and was very, it was very funny. But he was asking her, you know, do you listen to Michael Cohen's podcast? And then he says, have you listened? And it's called Mea Culpa. And he said, and have you listened to every episode of Michael Cohen's podcast? And she goes, absolutely not. And
I will say, I don't think anyone has copped to listening to Michael Cohen's podcast, not even the juror who said that they had some sort of tangential financial connection. Not even that person had listened to the podcast.
And yet it racks up pretty good numbers, I think, because I think there are a bunch of Anna calls resistance wine moms who are kind of into the Mea Culpa podcast.
But no, but so we had that amazing moment. And then the next witness called, drumroll.
OPEX.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Lawfare listeners, Ben Wittes here. I want to tell you about the first time I got a report from the folks at Delete Me. It was shortly after I started using the service back in 2022, and they sent me their first privacy report. I have since gotten 8 others, and it contained some shocking information. They had removed my data from 56 separate data brokers, that this had included 133 separate records, including 621 individual pieces of personal information. The data broker with the most information about me was a company I'd never heard of called People by Name. And here's the thing. Since then, every couple of months, I've gotten another privacy report from Delete Me, and it always contains more information that they have removed from the data brokers about me. In the second report, they informed me they had removed my stuff from 41 data brokers and that the one with the most information about me was called HLEC. I have no idea what HLEC is. So the other day, I got my latest report and it includes 15 more data brokers with my personal information, 113 pieces of personally identifiable information. Big culprit this time is something called My Life. Well, I want to tell you that they don't have My Life anymore. And that is why I recommend Delete Me. As this little anecdote shows, there's a lot of my data out there. And these companies keep acquiring it and making it available to anybody who can pay. And I have slept a little bit more easily ever since I found a solution to this problem. And I want to stress, as I do every time, that I started using this before Delete Me started advertising with Lawfare. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online, and it makes sure it stays off. And that's the point of this little story, that, you know, they keep coming back. You can get it removed once, but they'll put it back. And then Delete Me comes and takes it off again. It's a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports, just like the ones I've been describing, showing what info they found where they found it, and what they removed. And critically, as this story reflects, it isn't just a one-time service. It's always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. It does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information off the web. Data brokers hate Delete Me, which is why I like it. Your profile is no longer theirs to sell. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and use promo code lawfare20 at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and enter code LAWFARE20 at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/lawfare20, code lawfare20.
Oh, Pix is up and walk us through it. What did she start to talk about on direct?
All right. So I want to preface this by saying that a lot of people seem to be tweeting, including, frankly, some people who should know better. I'm not going to name any names, but seem to be tweeting that this is the killer witness for the prosecution. And Anna and I both sat through the entirety of Hope Hicks's testimony, which none of the people who were tweeting this seem to have done. They're wrong. It's a useful witness for the prosecution. She got some good stuff in. She also made some pretty decent points on cross for Emil Bovey. On the whole, it's a constructive witness for the prosecution, in my opinion. There is nothing earth-shattering or groundbreaking about. And so if you see any tweets that say, Hope Hicks testified, you know, Trump is toast, here's why, don't read the rest of that thread. That person is probably talking out of his ass.
Well, and I also think that there's a big expectation gap issue here where everyone hears Hope Hicks and everyone thinks, oh, she's Trump's inner circle. She was with the Trump organization. She was at the White House. You know, she's going to know where all the bodies are buried kind of thing. And I don't think that she was ever intended to be a bombshell witness. I think that what we actually got was a lot of corroboration and context to various parts of this story. One is that we got more context on the campaign's reaction to the Access Hollywood video and kind of how there's some good testimony that the prosecution can use in a closing statement. For example, Hope Hicks testified that when she listened to the Access Hollywood tape for the first time, she was stunned by it. You know, she said there was a consensus among the campaign that it would be damaging, things like that within this narrative that the prosecution has, that the Access Hollywood tape drops. And it's after that, that Trump and Cohen and the people who are part of this conspiracy to suppress stories, became really concerned about this idea that the Stormy Daniels deal maybe had to move forward because it was going to be especially damaging in the wake of that tape. So we got some context there on the Access Hollywood tape. We also got a corroboration of various, you know, things like Trump getting in contact with David Pecker at various times for calls that related to the Karen McDougal deal. So we got that. We also got the fact that Hope Hicks had heard about Stormy Daniels. I think it was at some point in 2015 when she was on a plane with Trump. So we got kind of, you know, that Trump knew who Stormy Daniels was, maybe, or that kind of corroborates that fact, including, you know, things that we got when Rona Graff testified and he had Stormy's contact in his phone and that kind of thing. So we got a lot of that. What we didn't get, Ben, I will leave to you to discuss. But I think that, you know, my main takeaway is that we got a lot of context on some things. There's also some things about a conversation there at the end of her testimony in which this seems to be the thing that triggered her maybe getting emotional. She broke down. She started crying right when Emil Bovey started his cross. But Ben, I'll leave it to you to talk about the significance of that stuff.
Yeah. So I think all that's exactly right. That's what the prosecution got out of her, is a whole lot of the backstory of what's going on in the Trump campaign with Donald Trump personally and in the White House later when the story breaks. Here's what they didn't get. They didn't get and in my opinion, if they want to be confident of a conviction, they need to get this from somebody other than Michael Cohen. Corroboration that Donald Trump directed this to happen, in some sense, directed Michael Cohen to do this. We know Michael Cohen's going to testify to this, but the core of the lying sack of shit defense is don't believe Michael Cohen when he says this, right? And it'd be really helpful if you had somebody else in the inner circle who was privy to that. Now you kind of have that from David Pecker, but Only kind of. And so one, like, if the prosecution, if people thought that they were going to get that from Hope Hicks, they didn't get it. Here's the other thing we didn't get from Hope Hicks. And I think Emil Bovee did a very nice job of bringing this out. You know, the prosecution has made the argument that this is, you know, there's no element of the John Edwards defense here, right? That this was all about campaign influence. And Hope Hicks kind of gave the defense some stuff to work with here. On the one hand, she readily concedes that this was, you know, primarily about the job, the election, and that Trump was, you know, was very concerned always about the impact of on the election. And her line about this was, he would ask me all the time, how's it playing? And that meant in the public context of the election. But she also gave Bovee a lot of good material about Trump being very concerned about Melania's reaction, about his feelings of he didn't want the kids to be ashamed of him. He wanted them to feel proud of what he was doing, and he found this very painful. And so to the extent that the defense wants a kind of added richness to the line that they had in the oral argument, yes, he's a president, but he's also a husband, a father, a man, right? Which was something that Todd Blanche kind of opened his opening statement with. She gave them some stuff to work with on that. And so I think she is the single most important thing she gave to the prosecution, I think, is this thing that happens right at the end, which she then, you know, they then rest or, you know, finish with her. Bovee comes up and asks her a perfectly innocent question, and she falls apart, and they have to take a break. But the core of that exchange, I think, was, you know, it's complicated for the prosecution because it's not exactly the story that they would want, but I think it was pretty powerful. So, you know, like, again, a lot of people are saying this is the killer witness, and she's not. She's not going to, no juror is going to convict on the basis principally of Hope Hicks's testimony. But that said, I do think it was a constructive testimony from the government's point of view.
Well, and I think we should explain what it was that she said there at the end. So
sorry, I thought
it
I
was
did.
No. I mean, unless I missed something.
I may have just skipped over it.
So what happened is that they're talking about this moment in 2018 when the Stormy Daniels story was published. It was January of 2018 by the Wall Street Journal. And that was where it was reported, you know, that there was this payment from Cohen to Daniels for Stormy Daniels' silence. And then the very next month in February, Michael Cohen gave a statement to the New York Times in which he said, basically, yes, I did pay this, but I did it without Trump's knowledge. So we kind of deny that Trump knew it. And then Hope Hicks recounts a conversation that she had with Trump that was shortly after Michael Cohen, I believe it was the day after Michael Cohen gives this statement denying Trump's knowledge of the payment to Daniels to the New York Times. And Hicks is talking to Trump about it. And in her telling, Trump says, you know, I talked to Michael. He said that, you know, he made this payment. He did it out of the generosity of his own heart or his own kindness. He did it to protect me. And then, and I think that, you know, this gets into the series of questions in which is the reason Hope Hicks was reacting or kind of broke down. The prosecution says, and was it, you know, consistent with your understanding of Michael Cohen and your personal experience with him that he would do something like this out of the kindness of his own heart? And she said, I did not know Michael Cohen to be a particularly generous or selfless guy. He's the type of guy who seeks credit. And then they said, and did Trump say anything else in this conversation? And she said, he told me that he was glad that Cohen made the payment and that he believed that it was better to be dealing with the story coming out, meaning, you know, the story, Stormy Daniels story coming out now than before the election. So it was this kind of moment where there's two ways, I think, in which maybe both of those statements, one, she's kind of indicating that maybe Michael Cohen was not being truthful about Trump not knowing, because she, without exactly calling Trump or Cohen a liar, she says, you know, this isn't consistent with my experience with Michael Cohen. And then she also gives the prosecution a little bit of a helpful, you know, thing to use, in that she's saying that Trump said, I am very glad that we're dealing with it now and not before the election. So I think that those are two of the things that, in my view, although Ben, I think you had a different understanding of the Cohen comment.
Well, so I thought the Cohen comment was, so the critical point, just to be clear, is the second one, right? That the government is trying to make the argument that this was all about election interference. And to have from Trump's mouth, to some, not through Michael Cohen, but through somebody as credible as a witness as Hope Hicks. And look, there are a lot of comments in the chat about how sleazy she is or whatever, but she's an extremely good witness. And to have that in somebody else's mouth, Trump saying, I'm glad he made the payment because I'd rather deal with this now from the White House than, you know, before the election. I think is, you know, that is a very good thing for the prosecution. On the other hand, the comments about Michael Cohen, I think the prosecution will read them one way, and the defense will read them another way, which is, look, he's such a manipulator. He even had poor Donald Trump fooled, who had no idea that he'd done this and that he was such a criminal and blah, blah, blah. So I think those comments you can kind of read either way. The comments about what Trump said about his own subjective state of mind and experience, that's a significant piece of evidence that you're going to hear a lot about in closing argument.
Well, and one more thing on this point as well is that it's important to keep in mind that although Trump was telling Hope Hicks in 2018, and, you know, and again, it's not entirely clear to me what Trump was referencing about when he learned that Cohen made the payment. But if it was, you know, within that time period when the story came out, that is important because Trump at that point had already been making the reimbursement payments. Right. Those happened throughout 2017. And the prosecution statement of facts that say that it was shortly after Trump was elected that he agreed to reimburse Cohen. And so we're going to learn more, I think, and get more context for all of this. I don't think it's necessarily something that is going to be an issue for the prosecution that Hope Hicks was told by the then president that he didn't learn about this until after the fact, because we're going to find out some more context about what happened and when.
I just have one more question. I want to go back briefly to the Access Hollywood tape, because it's figured so prominently, I think, in the trial so far. As you both know, Justice Merchan ruled that it would be too prejudicial to actually play the tape itself and hear Trump's voice speaking those words. But he is allowing at some point for the prosecution to actually read a transcript or enter a transcript.
Transcript was introduced today.
So that's what I was going to ask. Was it read? And if so, whether there was a reaction from the jury and or Trump himself?
Well, it was not read into the record, but it was shown. So, you know, the transcript can come in, references to it can come in. The only thing that he's forbidden is the playing of the tape. And by the way, you know, for everybody who says that that's, you know, reflects, you know, Justice Merchan is really biased, you know, he kept the Access Hollywood tape away from the jury. And that's, you know, something that, you know, he should probably get a bouquet of flowers from the defendant for. And there are a number, there's a set of Sandoval rulings at the end of the day today that sort of follow a similar path. He's been actually very solicitous and careful of the former president against a sort of highly salacious but not directly probative material. The jury has not had a dramatic reading of it yet, but it is available there. And, you know, to the extent that people, you know, they are allowed to make reference to it, including to its text, they're just not allowed to play it.
Yeah. And in fact, when they were discussing whether the prosecution could admit these, the Washington Post article that I assume had a picture of Trump related to the Access Hollywood video on it, Justice Marchand made a comment where he didn't even want, it wasn't just the video and the audio. It was, he was saying, I don't even want his face associated with, you know, this, what was basically a transcript or that had excerpts of his comments in it. And he was saying, I think that, you know, that's really powerful evidence. And I just don't want his face or his voice associated with it. So he's being very careful here to, you know, or he's very concerned about the potential prejudice to Trump. And so I think Ben is right that he's just being very careful. And I mean, yeah, Blanche should send him some flowers.
Well, we will have to leave it there with a very punctual and careful Justice Marchand. Anna Bauer and Benjamin Wittes, thank you very much. We will see everyone Monday.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.